It's Coast to Coast AM, broadcasting from the Derby City at 840 WHAS in Louisville, Kentucky, one of the many iHeart studios. I'm Connie Willis, preparing for our next guest, Dr. Jeffrey Long. Before we say anything, happy Mother's Day out there to folks. Wow, always think about your mama. We call her Nurner in my family, so it's Happy Nurner's Day. We got to remember that. If you ever see my mom, if you ever meet my mom, it's Nurner. Coming up for you, we've got Dr. Jeffrey Long. Looking really forward to this. He's our featured guest. We're going to be talking about his findings on near-death experiences and what life after death might just hold for us. And we're going to get in a little bit deeper, too. He and I have said that we're going to get a little deeper than he has. And we're going to be talking about love in there. So let's see and talk about what's on the other side coming up here on Coast to Coast AM. It's Coast to Coast AM. I'm Connie Willis, and happy Mother's Day. We have a great feature guest tonight for you, as always, but here's a special guy that I don't know anybody that doesn't love this man. Everybody I've ever mentioned his name to is just like, oh, you're going to love him, Dr. Jeffrey Long. He is known for having the most he's scientifically researched near-death experiences, and he's posted over like 4,000 on his website. And it's not just near-death experiences that he likes to discuss, but also out-of-body experience, after-death communication research, and a very interesting man, also extremely positive, Dr. Jeffrey Long. Welcome to the show. How are you tonight?
I'm doing fantastic. Thank you, Connie.
I'm looking forward to this tonight. You and I are excited to talk together. Give more of your background, of all the education you have behind you.
Sure. Connie, I'm a physician. During the day, I'm a radiation oncologist, which is the medical use of radiation to treat cancer. But evenings and weekends, I do my near-death experience research. And as you've mentioned, I have a research website, nderf.org, devoted to my investigations, and have posted over 4,000 near-death experiences on the website as part of my research, by far the largest publicly accessible collection of near-death experiences in the world.
And what exactly would you describe as a near-death experience?
Sure. Now, while no two near-death experiences are the same, the definition I use for my research is you have to be, as the name implies, near death. In other words, you're so physically compromised that you're unconscious or may even be clinically dead with absent heartbeat. At this time, where it should be impossible to have a lucid experience, you do, and that's the experience part of the near-death experience.
And how did you get interested in this?
Well, actually, many, many years ago, I was in my residency training of radiation oncology reading a very prominent medical journal looking for a cancer article, and completely by accident came across an article that had in the title near-death experience, and I'd never heard of the concept. I was immediately fascinated, thinking, gosh, how is this possible? How can somebody be unconscious and yet have this lucid, organized experience and have these experiences be the same worldwide? And I knew nothing in my medical training could possibly explain this. So I stopped, read the article, looked up some references there, and my journey of discovery and research into near-death experience really began that day.
Wow, that's interesting, you know, because a lot of people, they're just not open to that.
You know, I think more people are as we get more and more evidence, as we'll be discussing on the show. The evidence for near-death experience has never been stronger. We continue to find lines of evidence all converging on the concept that near-death experiences are, in a word, real.
And what are those? Tell us about the evidence.
Well, sure, there's 9 lines of evidence, some of the strongest lines of evidence. Well, certainly, as we said, people that have these are physically unconscious or even clinically dead. Well, gee, Connie, by the very definition of unconscious, it means you don't have a conscious experience at that time, and yet people having near-death experiences do. In fact, the level of consciousness and alertness during the near-death experience is usually even greater than that experience during everyday life, even while they're physically unconscious. Certainly another strong line of evidence is, well, with near-death experiences, one of the most common things is what's called an out-of-body experience. At the time of unconscious or clinical death, consciousness rises typically above that body, and from vantage point above their body, they can see and hear ongoing earthly events, including often their own frantic resuscitation efforts, people try to bring them back to life.
Wow.
And yet, in my research and in the research of others, we find that what they see in that out-of-body experience, even if it's far from their physical body and far outside of any possible physical awareness, is almost always absolutely verbatim accurate. Virtually never is what they're seeing found later to be unreal. So again, the realistic out-of-body experience is another very strong line of evidence. We've got other lines. We've got near-death experiences occurring under general anesthesia, which should be impossible.
Right.
Even people born totally blind can have highly visual near-death experiences, and of course that's absolutely not medically explicable. And then even very young children, in my research, age 5 and young, near-death experiences like anybody else, like older children and adults.
How do you find this out? How do you find the people, the candidates to talk to and ask them about this? And are they all very open to talking to you about it?
Well, certainly as part of my research, I've talked to vast numbers of people that have near-death experience. Basically, the core of my research is a survey on the internet website, the NDERF.org, NDERF.org website. This survey has over 100 questions, including some asked in a redundant fashion. So that's, if you will, the built-in quality assurance of this survey to help make sure that people are filling it out accurately. And actually, scientifically, it's been found that completing online surveys is as reliable as the traditional pencil and paper survey. So we're confident that we've got accurate data, and asking over 100 questions means that we can understand near-death experiences in a depth that was just simply not possible before. And of course, now that I've interviewed in this manner over 4,000 people with near-death experiences, we're now more confident of these remarkable findings in near-death experience than we ever could be.
When you're doing this in evenings and when you're doing this on the weekends, it's kind of like maybe you should quit your day job, right? I mean, you're working hard.
Yeah, that's a real good point, Connie. I feel like it's my second full-time job. I lead a little bit of a Spartan life. We do work very hard at it. Yet I think you really work hard at what you really love in life, and I love this research. I love communicating with people that have had near-death experiences, and certainly it has changed my life, some of the things that I'm finding and the understandings that I've developed from this research. In fact, it's interesting, even though I'm a physician and been so for decades, I find at this point in my life, these people that have the courage to share their remarkable near-death experiences are at this time among my life's greatest teachers.
Well, and by the way, you're listening to Coast AM. This is Connie Willis, and we're talking with Dr. Jeffrey Long about near-death experiences and his research into this. When you're trying to find people that have had them, how do you connect with them? Do they contact you because they learn about the site, or do other doctors say, hey, this just occurred? Do you find out through friends and relatives? How do you get to that person so that you can ask them these questions and learn from them?
Yeah, we get people referred to me from just about every source. People in the area that I live are very aware that I do this research, and they may contact me directly. The website, the research website, is so prominently ranked on Google that we literally have over 500,000 pages on the website read every month. So we have about 75,000 unique visitors. So literally people from all over the world find us on the internet. In fact, so significant is our global outreach that we have portions of the website devoted to near-death experience translated into over 20 languages. So we've truly become a global outreach.
Well, absolutely. Why not? Because this happens to, it can happen to anybody at any age, at any time. It doesn't matter where they live.
Connie, that's a very good point. It has been amazing to me in my research that it seems to make no difference whether you're a Muslim in Egypt or a Hindu in India or a Christian in the United States. No matter where on the planet you live, the near-death experience, when it happens, is strikingly similar in its content.
Interesting. So, okay, I've talked to some people along the way that have had these as well, and I've heard some people have had experiences, and then other people had wonderful experiences. So tell me about that part.
Yeah, sure. Certainly that's a good point. Some people have frightening near-death experiences, and yet when you read the accounts, you kind of go, well, they were just frightened because things were so unfamiliar. A good example on that, Connie, is we had a patient who coded, and they were in the ambulance, were being rushed to the hospital as they were ambulance attendants performing cardiopulmonary resuscitation, trying desperately to keep them alive. As part of their near-death experience at this time, their consciousness was over their body and actually over the ambulance, and there were angels visiting, several of them. But he was so frightened by the angels, he was batting at them. So again, technically, Connie, that's a frightening experience. And yeah, I think all of us hearing about that would say, wow, you know, once you've calmed down, buddy, you're going to find that to be the beginning of an amazingly blissful, positive experience. So fright is certainly an emotion, and many experiences that have some fright in it later on become very positive and blissful. In fact, the great majority now do. Now, the true hellish near-death experiences are rare. In my research, it's less than a percent. They certainly do occur, and these are, if you will, objectively frightening, and with all the hellish bells and whistles and trimmings that one could imagine. Now, even with hellish near-death experiences, I think the important thing to remember is that even while these experiences are truly overwhelmingly frightening, there is a silver lining to that darkness, and that is when people have these types of experiences, have had a few years after their experience, they've learned from it, they live from it, they'll very often say, you know, there were some things I needed to change in my life that I needed to come to understand, and that type of experience was probably the only way that I could have been reached with that important awareness, that understanding, which could have allowed me to change my life and live my life better for the rest of my life. So even the very dark, frightening near-death experiences often have that potential for positive personal growth.
Oh, yeah. In fact, the guy that I knew that had one, and it was a hellish one. It was, he said it scared him to death, but it also woke him up. He's now a priest.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Pretty interesting, huh?
Yeah, I love that, man. You know, very good point. Near-death experiences can happen to priests, ministers, scientists, physicians, even atheists, people from any religious belief. All of them can have that. And from all the research we've done, and that's really an interesting story, Connie, that he became a priest.
Mm-hmm.
After all the decades of research, and I've co-authored a scholarly book topic, a chapter on the topic, in addition to my research I published in my book, even after all these decades of research, we simply cannot predict who will have a near-death experience at the time of a life-threatening event, nor can we predict what that content will be. It's really interesting. Very seemingly very good people can rarely have that hellish experience, and yet for the overwhelming majority of people, it's that incredible, blissful, positive near-death experience, often full of light and love.
It's Dr. Jeffrey Long on Coast to Coast AM talking about near-death experiences, and he said the word love. How significant is love with near-death experiences?
Well, Connie, that's another great question. In our most recent survey that we do of near-death experiencers, we ask them straight up. We ask, during your near-death experience, did you encounter any specific information regarding love? And remarkably, 58% of near-death experiencers said, why, yes, I did receive that kind of mystical awareness of love right during their experience. And that was a much higher percentage than I would have guessed. And yet, we also, as part of that survey, asked people to, well, explain that. What exactly specific information during your near-death experience did you get about love? And that's where things got very interesting indeed, Connie. We started hearing some concepts of love that literally changed my view about love. Certainly the unearthly, overwhelmingly beautiful, positive, transcendent love that near-death experiencers describe has been absolutely remarkable.
I love hearing that because I'm one of the people that believe that all there is, the only thing there is that's real, is love. And to hear that you're saying that that's the connection that they get on the other side, and I believe that we all have the connections here on this side as well. And when they do occur, that love connection, I think that's something to really hold on to and not let go, because that's the closest feeling you can get. You're kind of confirming that.
You know, you've just told me, Connie, what so many people that have near-death experiences have shared as well. No question about that. That's often one of the most powerful things that people experience. And it's more than just a feeling. I mean, they can have that overwhelming, intense feeling of peace, connection, unity, love. But, you know, even beyond that, they realize that love is in the afterlife, on the other side, if you will, is really among the most important thing there. And what they bring back from that remarkable experience in the afterlife is that kernel of understanding and knowledge about love that helps make them more loving during their life, remainder of their earthly life. I mean, these people can be remarkably changed, even profoundly changed. Even sometimes their family says, wow, what happened here after their experience? I mean, you're a different person, far more loving and concerned. In fact, our survey, Connie, we specifically asked about changes after a near-death experience, and we asked about how compassionate they were. And for people that had near-death experiences, 24% said they were greatly compassionate toward others before their near-death experience, but 76% say they're greatly compassionate towards others after their near-death experience. That's how remarkably transformative the near-death experience, including the encounter and awareness of that unearthly love, can be.
It takes the fear away. Yay! Love conquers all. I know there's so much fear, fear-based decisions. It's like, no, base it on love. It's great to hear this. You know, I've also, when I talk to people that have gone through this too, they have abilities. They have some psychic abilities when they come back. Have you found out that to be true?
Yeah, I sure have. That's an amazing aspect of near-death experience research. When people come back, you're absolutely right. A significant percentage of them have, well, for lack of better terms, psychic abilities. A lot of it seems to be intuitive. In other words, they seem to understand, be aware of people better. It's almost from time to time they can, that some describe an awareness during their experience of future events. Certainly a whole realm of, if you will, psychic abilities have happened. Premonitions are very common after near-death experiences. A very, very fascinating reading.
What do you think that's from? You think it's because they've learned to let go of fears and stress and what we're taught in the ego and the conscious mind? I mean, what do you think that is?
You know, I think a lot of the intuitive ability that they have is they're more compassionate, loving, and open toward other people. I mean, think about it. If you come back with a near-death experience and have a profound lesson about the importance and significance of love, you're going to be naturally more compassionate, aware of people, focused on them. You'll probably, like, gosh, I have, after even researching this, listen more to people, try to understand people more. And I think as a result of that, you can pick up on those nonverbal cues, mm-hmm. that sort of information people are transmitting without being aware of it. And all of a sudden, you have that intuitive ability of understanding others that you didn't have before. And that's one of the more common psychic abilities that are described.
I see. You get out of yourself a little bit more and listen to others.
Absolutely. And certainly a lot of us letting go of that fear. I mean, it's like fear is a barrier between two people, and it prevents them from really understanding or being open to other people, from connecting or from forming a meaningful, significant relationship. And when that fear breaks down, when you have a near-death experience and live life, if you will, more out loud, more courageously, it helps these people to form stronger love connections with other people, even with themselves. And they respect love themselves better, respect other people's better. And you can see, Connie, that's a recipe for a powerful earthly relationship.
It is. You've given me a visual where every woman can take that man that doesn't want to commit and shake him to see the light and then come back and go, all right, let it all go. The fear's gone now.
And how the world would change if people let go of that fear. I mean, you know, that's a good point. I mean, you know, commitment is just one more fear, and yet, you know, yes. if you have that profound loving relationship, you know, then the commitment follows naturally from a loving relationship, and it just becomes a beginning of a, you know, further growth, further positive interaction for all the rest of the life. So, yeah, that's certainly a profound lesson from near-death experiences, with importance to each and every one of us in our earthly life.
Talking to the different people I know that have gone through this, I mean, it's just amazing how their lives have changed and how they've just taken a different route totally. Some people actually believe, and I hope we have enough time before the break, they actually believe that we don't. So I'm going to hold that because it's a really cool little question. I want you to get into it pretty deep. And I want to definitely make sure in the next hour that, or the next segment, that we talk about specifically what some of these people have seen. So it's Dr. Jeffrey Long that we're talking to, and you're listening to Coast AM. We have more to discuss with near-death experiences here on Coast to Coast AM. Hello and welcome back to Coast AM. Connie Willis here. Happy Mother's Day. Don't forget to take care of mom today. She took care of you. Your turn now. Hey, if you've ever wanted to meet George, you know what? Go to the coasttocoastam.com and see where he's going to be. I tell you what, this man gets to have all the fun. He's going to be at the Contact in the Desert. That's coming up at the end of this month. And there's going to be a lot of really, really cool people there. George himself also will be amongst everybody. You can meet him and say hello. You can also see him in June. He's going to be at the Hard Rock Cafe or the Hard Rock Casino Theater. That's in Vancouver. Beautiful area. And even in August, we know that he's going to be at the Life in the Afterlife conference, which, hey, that relates to our guy today. We'll have to see if he's going to be there, too. It's Dr. Jeffrey Long that we're talking to tonight, and he's telling us about near-death experiences. So he's coming up more, and stick around. Don't forget, if you want to find out anything about George or anything else, be a Coast Insider, too, go to coasttocoastam.com. More to come here on Coast to Coast AM. It's Coast to Coast AM with Connie Willis, and we are scientifically looking at near-death experiences with Dr. Jeffrey Long, who has studied this for, like, ever, all of his life. It feels like it to him because weekends and weeknights are all dedicated to this, and he's been doing this for quite a while. Dr. Jeffrey Long, Jeff, I wanted to ask you about, okay, let's go through a typical, the visual, the feelings, the sounds, a typical, for the most part, even though they're very different, near-death experience.
Yeah, sure, Connie. Now, a typical but detailed near-death experience would go like this. There's, of course, that life-threatening event, unconsciousness, even clinical death, even the heart stopping. At that time, a common first element is what's called an out-of-body experience. Consciousness arises above the body, and from that vantage point, they can see ongoing earthly events. Sometimes they even see things far from their physical body. After that, they may pass into or through a tunnel. The tunnel's variably described, but never claustrophobic. At the end of the tunnel, there's often a mystical, unearthly-like, unlike the light in a near-death experience, unlike any light that we're familiar with in our earthly life. There may be in an unearthly realm, often called a heavenly realm, certainly an understandable term because it's such a beautiful realm. There may be landscapes, plants, animals. There may be beauty, colors that absolutely have no correlate on Earth. There may be buildings and other people there. Even if they were in overwhelming misery from that event that nearly killed them, in the unearthly realms, they're essentially always pain-free and feeling intense feelings of love and connection. In fact, interestingly, a common thing that they feel is that these unearthly, beautiful realms is actually their real home, not their earthly life that's so familiar with them, but they feel they've actually truly come back to home where they came from.
Interesting.
And they have what's called a life review, where they see part or all of their prior life. There's often what's called a boundary near the end of their experience. They may have to make a decision about whether to return to their earthly life or not. And interestingly, even though people that have a near-death experience may have lived years to decades and their earthly life is all they remembered up to that time, the great majority, when they have a choice in their near-death experience about returning to their earthly life or not, don't want to return to their earthly life. And yet, ultimately, that decision is made, and then when they recover from that close brush with death, they have their near-death experience to tell.
Wow. Okay, so let's start from, okay, when it first happens and they have an out-of-body experience, so they're looking down and they're actually seeing people working on them maybe or family around.
Absolutely.
So you're asking them the questions to find this out. How far do these people go? I mean, how long, I guess, do they want to hang out and see what's going on, or do they get whipped into this tunnel after that? Do they have a choice?
Usually not. Usually it's sort of they seem drawn or just a natural progression. While they're in that out-of-body experience, certainly they're watching the activity around their body, but sometimes, for example, we have near-death experiences where they coded, their heart stopped, say, in the operating room, and yet their consciousness will travel to other parts of the hospital. We have recall vividly a near-death experience where their consciousness went to the cafeteria of the hospital where they could see and hear their family talking. Later, when they recovered, they confirmed verbatim what they saw and heard was exactly what was happening, even while they were coded, unconscious, under general anesthesia in a different part of the hospital. So that can happen as part of that out-of-body experience, but the flow through these elements of near-death experience is generally seamless.
When they go through the tunnel, is it fast? Is it slow? Is that where they're seeing the life review? Is it cold? Is it hot?
Yeah, the tunnel is variably described. It can be large, small. Very often they're moving at a very high rate of speed. In fact, sometimes they get the sense that they're traveling from one dimension into another. There's almost never unpleasant sensations during typical near-death experiences, so they're not hot or they're cold. It's unlikely to have a life review in the tunnel, although that's been reported. Sometimes they can see some things outside of the tunnel. In fact, I just recently reviewed a near-death experience where they thought they saw the shadows of tree branches outside the tunnel, and then as their experience progressed, they realized that was their beloved relatives, their friends, the ones that had died before them were actually casting shadows outside the tunnel, and that was what that really was. So again, the tunnel's not really claustrophobic, it's not unpleasant, but at the end of the tunnel, they merge into realms that are truly unearthly, and that's where things really get interesting in near-death experiences.
My guest tonight is Dr. Jeffrey Long, talking about near-death experiences here on Coast to Coast AM. You say it really gets interesting at this point. What do you mean by that?
Well, that's when they're in their unearthly realms. I mean, it's amazing to me how people can describe colors that literally do not exist on Earth. They may hear music there that is beautiful beyond anything that is even possible on Earth. They may encounter landscapes, cities, libraries, buildings, lands, things that basically are beyond anything that we know here on Earth. Around this time, they're almost always having overwhelming feelings of peace and love. Peace and love are probably the two most common words used to describe a near-death experience. So that's certainly, you know, something that's beyond anything that they could have possibly imagined, or certainly beyond anything that they've experienced in their prior life, is the beauty and the glory, if you will, of the realms that they're in, these unearthly realms and near-death experiences.
Do some people say, you know, because there's a lot of people that they don't want to pass on, they've got too many things to do, so when they kind of maybe recognize that this is what's going on, if they do they recognize this, and do they have a chance at that point to, do they try to fight it, or do they realize, wow, this is kind of cool, this is kind of nice?
Connie, that's a great question, and In the nearly several decades I've been doing near-death experience research, things have kind of shifted. Early in my research, people didn't know so much about near-death experiences. It wasn't talked about as much. People weren't aware of it, and so they really didn't understand what was going on. But nowadays, you know, due to excellent awareness of near-death experience, and certainly Coast to Coast has helped people understand near-death experiences, but now as a result of that, a number of people having a near-death experience know what's going on. They know that they're dying. They have that out-of-body experience and see their own unconscious or clinically dead body. And at the current time, we see more and more people that will either say, oh, I'm going to let go of that horrific illness, accident, or life-threatening event. I want to go on. I want to move forward. And yet there's another population of people that say, no, I have my family, I have my friends, I have my life to live, and I don't want to leave. And they will, if, in a sense, fight their way back into their earthly life.
One of the people that I know that had this happen to him, he had said that he felt so good outside of it, but something pushed him back in, and then he felt the pain instantly of being back in the human body.
And that's a real good point. When we talk about that out-of-body experience, consciousness separating from the body, don't forget these people are having severe illnesses or trauma that led to them being unconscious or dead. And so they're typically in horrific pain immediately before their near-death experience starts. Immediately, when consciousness separates from the body, almost instantly, they're not having pain. They feel that sense of peace, love, connection, all the incredible positive feelings they've had on Earth multiplied times 1,000. And yet, at the end of the near-death experience, often they return to their body, some describe it as being slammed back in. Almost instantly, they start to go back through that misery, pain, that discomfort of the accident or injury which nearly killed them.
Is there like a weight difference when possibly the soul goes out of the body? Is there any change in weight? Has that been studied?
Yeah, good question. In the early 1900s, there was one investigator that said that it seemed that there was some fraction of an ounce reduction in weight when people died. Interestingly, at this experiment they performed was to actually have people dying on scales. More modern research has suggested there doesn't seem to be any weight loss when people die, and that seems to be valid. This soul, this consciousness that each and every one of us have that separates during a near-death experience seems to be absolutely weightless, and in fact, that soul literally cannot interact with the physical world. We've had people in their out-of-body experience try to touch the doctors trying to resuscitate them or tell them they're really okay, and they can't be heard, they can't be seen, and they can't be felt. So the soul seems to be of a substance different from what we have on Earth. It seems to be non-physical, and as best we can tell, does not seem to have any discernible weight.
Wow. You know, I mean, it's interesting because when you do the studies, of course, everybody comes back and they're able to tell you about it. If they are able to, you know, we don't know once they take the next step that are they whisked away and seeing these buildings or other things permanently, or are they able to come back and see the funeral and see what else is going on. You know, it's like, do you have that freedom at that point or not? You always want to think that the people around you during those times, and a lot of people say they are, so golly, you know, you got to cross that line to know that, and we can't get that info, can we?
Well, we kind of can, Connie, and I guess, you know, especially for people that have had mothers that have passed away on this Mother's Day, I've got some great news. One of the things I've investigated is what's called shared near-death experiences. That's where two or more people have a simultaneous life-threatening event. And I've now got a small series of people where both of these people are unconscious, maybe hovering near death, and yet they're sharing an experience. They see each other, they communicate with each other. One of the most beautiful near-death experiences that I've read was shared with us was there was a bad car accident. There was a guy and his lady who they were engaged, actually. And at the time, they had a very severe auto accident, and the two of them rose up. They had that out-of-body experience. They were aware of each other. They went up and met some spiritual beings up far above their car, and they were actually, Connie, holding hands. I mean, they were that close, both in life and even in that consciousness apart from life. And the spiritual beings that they were with communicated overwhelming love and compassion, but the spiritual beings took the two hands that they had together and separated them and made it clear to both of them that the injuries were so severe for the lady that she could not return to her earthly life and that the guy would return to his earthly life. And so the guy watched as this his fiance moved forward into this blissful, unearthly realm. And very shortly after that, he recovered consciousness in his car. And even without opening his eyes, he knew tragically his fiance beside him was dead.
Wow, but he also saw it, so he had to live a different life than some of the other people that may not have experienced that, for sure, you know, the knowing of where she went and that he would be with her, without a doubt, I'm sure.
And if that's some of the strongest evidence, these shared near-death experiences, what people describe during near-death experiences seems to be the initial steps of people that suffer permanent irreversible death. In other words, it really seems to be that way. Even if you're not going to return to your earthly life, that you're going to have the, you know, these wonderful, loving beings greet you, and you're going to be, if you will, led or ultimately end up in that overwhelmingly beautiful, loving afterlife that seems to be the destiny of all of us.
Well, when you say spiritual beings, are they angels? Are they ETs? How do people describe them?
You know, variably, the consciousness apart from the body, and I've asked directly in my survey, what does your body look like? It's variable. Early on in the experience, it can often look as like they have arms and legs, and yet they're weightless, and they can may even be able to see through them. As the near-death experience progresses, they tend to be less humanoid in appearance. They're often described as energy, as light, as something non-material, if you will. Seems to be what the true appearance of essence of our soul is. And certainly, as near-death experiences progress, very often they become aware that they can, if you will, assume any apparent form, and yet they're really not made of earthly flesh and blood.
And what about when they say that they come across a spiritual being, what do they look like? How do they describe them?
Usually a lot, you know, the spiritual beings seem to be there to aid in that transition from our earthly life to the unearthly heavenly realms, and so they often look typically like the appearance of the near-death experiencer at that point in time in they're having. And so, and even above and beyond the appearance, it's interesting what they describe much more often when near-death experiencers tell them is that overwhelming sense of love, compassion, connection, their concern for them, and that seems to be the dominant thing that impresses them the most. But actual appearance seems to be more, if you will, humanoid, at least at that point in time. Later on, we've had some very deep NDEs where they describe them as just simply amorphous, if you will, energy.
Okay. Some of my readings along the way have been that they look totally like an angel or extraterrestrial or hooded being or even, you know, their long past loved ones, you know,
and
their family.
That's true. They can look like any of that, including the long-lost loved ones, especially relevant on Mother's Day. It's not at all unusual for them to encounter deceased relatives in the near-death experience. These are joyous reunions, and interestingly, even if the person died of a debilitating or disfiguring illness, at the time of this reunion and near-death experiences, they're always picture-perfect health. And whatever the relationship was during life, these are joyous reunions, a great deal of sharing, you know, great deal of hope and inspiration in near-death experiences for anyone who's lost their mother or other relative.
How has this changed your life? I mean, to learn this, I mean, holy cow, you sound so joyous yourself. You have a smile in your voice without a question. So how has this changed your outlook in life?
Wow, that's a good question, Connie. It's been huge. The impact of doing my research on near-death experiences has been amazing. It's touched my professional life. Certainly, as a radiation oncology doctor, I deal with people with cancer. They have life-threatening illnesses, and some people aren't going to make it, and they may even be near the end of their life. And yet, with my research and my understanding of near-death experience and the afterlife for all of us, that's helped me to be more courageous, to be more there for my patients, to be more compassionate. I can literally be a better doctor because of the research I've done. It's almost as if I'm taking a little piece of heaven that other people have described in their near-death experiences and taking it to my heart and helping manifest that in my relations with the patients that I see every day. Personally, of course, it's helped me to be more loving, compassionate. You can't read thousands of near-death experiences and not incorporate a little bit of that into your life. It certainly helped me to be more. Of course, I don't have a fear of death, as is typical of near-death experiences. I know what lies after death, and I know how wonderful it is. It's helped me to live my life more courageously, more lovingly, more interested in doing this research and carrying this profound, positive, and inspirational message to the people that I meet and to the world as a whole.
It's Coast to Coast AM that you're listening to, and this is Dr. Jeffrey Long here with myself, Connie Willis. We're talking about near-death experiences and his studies and research for a long, long time scientifically. Jeff, do you find yourself consoling people that have the fear that they do know that their time is short, and you are talking with them and letting them know with encouragement and positivity, don't be afraid?
Absolutely. I think that's an important role that I have, knowing that there is an afterlife and the reality and how wonderful it is. Now more than ever, when someone's their earthly days are numbered, they have a life-threatening event, typically cancer, and they're not going to be with us long in our earthly life, now more than ever I can reach out to them and share my confidence, my conviction, based on evidence, powerful evidence, that our earthly life really isn't the end. And that's an important message, not only for the person dying, but also for the people that love that person, their friends, family, and loved ones. I can reassure them that certainly they will die, unfortunately, but we'll all be back together again. And we'll be back together again in a place, in a realm where cancer doesn't exist, where the infirmity, illness, misery, anxieties, all of that stuff that makes earthly life so difficult will be gone. It'll be a place of true paradise. And I think that message, that awareness, again, based on evidence, has been profoundly helpful to a large number of people that I've talked with in my professional life and in my personal life.
People that have had the near-death experiences, I'm hoping that they go to these places where people are, you know, a little fearful, and they talk to them and let them know, hey, let me tell you my story. I think that would be pretty awesome for them to do. We're talking with Dr. Jeffrey Long of Near-Death Experiences. And he has studied a lot of them, a lot of interesting information for sure. Let us know what you'd like to ask. You can always do that too. And I know I'm getting them on my email, so I'll be checking those and seeing if I can't help you out with that. So stick with us. We got more to come here with Dr. Jeffrey Long. It's Coast to Coast AM.